love of the game. This is Love Said Match.
I mean, Andre Agassi had this goal. You don't have to be better than everyone else in the draw when you go out on the court. Like, you have to be better than someone that's across the net.
I think you got to stay active in a sport sense, you know, go out there, do some sports. I think it always makes you feel better, maybe more tired in the very moment, but actually the rest of the day feels better. And then I think giving back as well, you know, making other people happy is going to give you a good feeling too.
Hi guys, welcome to Tennis Pal Chronicles, the podcast to feed your passion for all things tennis. We are on the road. I am in my best friend Valerie's car. Hi, Valerie.
Hey, Philip. Hey, everyone.
We're driving down to San Diego right now. It's a beautiful, beautiful Saturday morning. We're having a great time just chatting about life and dreams and all of the things that we're hopeful for. And we're heading down to the Symbiotica San Diego Open, which is a WTA event. So we're heading down to see some of the players that are going to be playing down there. I'm going to take a look at the list and start reading off some of the names. But Valerie, tell us how you're doing and tell us a little bit about your experience that you had last time that you came.
Yes, last year was my first time down at this Symbiotic Open, and I had such a fantastic experience that I knew I had to drag Philip with me this year. Last year was a special year because it happened. Actually, it wasn't last year. It was the year before, because the WTA Tour Finals was in Texas. So we actually got, like, all the top eight players came, since they were going to be in the United States anyways for the Tour Finals. It was so amazing. I walked right into this tiny little tennis center. It's held at Barnes Tennis Center, and I walked right in, and right when you walk in, there's Garbina Muguruza, and it was fantastic. I'm just standing next to her like a little kid, all excited inside. I'm telling my friends who know nothing about tennis, that's a really good tennis. She won a Grand Slam. Like, she's a really big deal. And she's so tall and muscular. Anyway, then we went to the practice courts. We went on qualifying day, as Philip and I are going for the first day of qualifying today as well. But a lot of the other players are warming up. And so we got to see a lot of people warming up. We saw Paula Badosa. We saw Bianca Andreescu. We saw Garbina Muguruza. We saw Sloane Stephens, Madison Keys, Coco Gauff. I didn't get to see Iga warming up, but I did get to see a match of hers. I saw Danielle Collins and I think Donna Vekic we saw, and Karolina Pliskova. I remember I took a picture, I think, and sent it to you, Philip, because I was like, look at your girl. And she was just like walking by. And I just I think it's a great tournament. Anyone in Southern California who's never gone, I encourage you to go. It's very intimate. The tickets are reasonably priced, and it's just
$25, I think, right?
For qualifying day, yeah, it was $25, and then for the match days, I think you can get tickets like $60 or less. And there's only like two courts that have stands, let's say, and they're very small and intimate. I think they don't hold any more than 5,000 people, so it's a great opportunity to just have a really nice, intimate interaction with the players, and they do Q&As and things like that. In fact, today they're doing a Q&A with Leyla Fernandez and another one with someone else, maybe you know, but you could tell us about the lineup.
Yeah, so some of the headliners, I'll just read the seeds so that people know. The first seed is Jessica Pegula.
JP!
The American player. She's seed number one. Seed number two is Beatrice had to admire. Emma Navarro is number three. Pavlyuchenkova is number four. Number five, Diana Yastremska, one of my favorites. I'm really excited about her. Marta Kostic. Marta Kostic is number six. Donna Vekic is number seven. And Leyla Fernandez, bringing up the rear from Canada, she's number eight. So they're all the headliners that are going to be playing. Today, we're going to be seeing a lot of players that I've I'm not familiar with. So I'm super excited to see some, especially a lot of Americans are playing.
Yeah. I noticed that. Hopefully we can get the next up-and-comer.
Yeah, it looks like two matches are playing right now because I'm actually getting live scores on my...
Oh yeah, it's 11 a.m.
So yeah, so...
Running a little late. There was car problems.
Right. It started at 10 o'clock. We're driving down from L.A. It takes about 2 hours to drive down to San Diego. But right now there's a live match with these two players.
Oh, Timofeeva and Stakusic.
A Canadian player that I'm not familiar with, Stakusic. She is 19 years old, currently ranked 282 in the world. She hasn't won a title yet. So should be a fairly straightforward play for Timofeeva.
Or Timofeeva. I don't remember.
Timo, yeah.
She had a good run at the Australian Open. I cannot remember who she tested a big player and I think had a pretty big win as well. So before we get down there at some point, we'll have to look up that draw and see who those wins were against.
She's just outside of the 100 ranking. She's 103 currently in her ranking. And, wow, she has prize money of $435,000. So she's done pretty well.
Nice.
Yeah. She at the Australian Open, she played Kostya.
Okay. Did she beat her?
No.
who did she win? Because she made it to, like, the third round, I think. Second or third round, I thought.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It doesn't tell me.
So I remember watching her match and watching her battle someone, and I was very impressed. Just can't remember who that someone was.
Also on court right now is Jacquemont versus Giavara. And it looks like Jacquemont won the first set. Looks like, it looks like Stakusic from Canada took the first set over Timofeeva, 6-2.
Was she that Canadian who was kind of like, had a really good run last year? I think she had a really good run. Maybe it was at the Billie Jean King Cup?
Let's just take a look.
They were talking about some young up-and-comer. I kept hearing, and I wonder if that, I bet that's her, the like surprise newcomer that played in Billie Jean Cup, King Cup, which is basically Fed Cup now, it's been renamed.
Probably is. I don't see it here on the WTA app, but by the time we get down there, we're going to be able to see Claire Liu, who is the American, playing against a Canadian named Stacey Fung. Who's 228, so that'll be kind of fun to see that. I really like watching Claire Liu play.
And, you know, the U.S. versus Canada matches are fun, as they can, maybe not for, like, a qualifier and, like, a match or this small of a tournament, but one of the best matches I've ever seen in my life in person was Milos Raonic and John Isner at Indian Wells, like, 14 years ago. And the Canadian-USA, like, battle of fans, it felt like Davis Cup. It was out of control, the atmosphere.
Nice. And after that match, it looks like, or maybe concurrently playing at the same time since there are two courts, Niemeyer from Germany is going to be playing Stefanovic. And then the second-to-last two matches, Fruvidova?
Is that... Ooh. Fruvidova, that's a name I recognize.
Yeah, me too. I recognize the name. Fruvidova is playing Kolodyska, and Marakova is playing Sramkova. And then to end out, there's so many more matches, actually. Also up is Hannah Chang from the U.S. is going to be playing Daria Saville from Australia. And... Barange is going to be playing Melankova. So lots of names that I don't know, and I'm really excited to actually get to see them play. There's two All-American matches that are scheduled for today. Alyssa Ahn, who is ranked number 886, is going to be playing against Ahn Lee, both Americans. She's ranked 166. So that'll be fun to get to know some of our American players. And also, I think at the same time, the two Americans, Kyla Day, she's going to be playing against Madison Sieg, both Americans. Madison is ranked at number 332, and Kyla Day is ranked at number 89. It's amazing. These people are top 100 players, and I'm not super familiar with their game.
Right? I know. Half of them don't even recognize their name, and I feel guilty about that.
Me too.
But I know the quality of their tennis. I mean, these players in the top 1,000 even the ones that are ranked 800, they are so good. You know, it's a lot of times it's just having the right opportunity or not having the funding to go and play tournaments outside of your country and build up ranking points to be able to get, oh, that's lovely, to be able to get into main draws places, you know, or they just might not have the funds to travel with their team somewhere. So it doesn't mean that these players are less than, right? They are still the cream of the crop, and that's what's so exciting is you never know who at this tournament might have a run and it could change their career completely, right? I mean, we've seen a lot of, there was qualifiers at the Australian Open this year that made runs. We've seen Emma Raducanu, actually Kostyuk, or was it Yastremska? Yastremska was a qualifier at the Australian Open.
Yeah.
Now she was what, like the 7th seed here at this tournament? Because of that deep run she had.
But she hasn't really been in form for the last two tournaments. I really expected a lot more of her because of her great run at the Australian Open. But in Doha and Dubai, she hasn't been doing great. So it'll be interesting to see. And, you know, it just makes you wonder, why do they have a run? And we'll have to talk about, speaking of runs, Kalinskaya from Dubai. We'll get to that. But the last, I just wanted to update everyone that the last match of the day, which we probably won't be staying for because it's probably going to be at like 7 or 8 o'clock at night or something. But the last match of the day is Hotama from Japan. Hotama, she's actually ranked in the top 100? No, she is 118. So just the fact that there's people within close to the 100 ranking that I've never heard of is bad on me. She's going to be playing Papa Michael. And then there's a player named Patinama Kurtov playing against Golfy. And those are the last two qualifying matches of the day. So really cool to just get to know these players as we come down to this WTA Tour, the Symbiotica San Diego Open. It's going to be running all the way through. Today is the first day of qualifying on a weekend, and then it'll be running all the way to March 3rd. And, of course, a lot of these people are just going to go on to Indian Wells afterwards and get in some practice there, work with their coaches. And from what I hear, everyone loves the fact that they're in California and playing tennis. So excited about that. Let's jump over to Dubai since we can recap that. It's on our schedule. Do you have any thoughts about the Dubai runs and what's been happening over there?
Well, without my notes, it's hard to say, but the most fresh match that I have in my mind was watching Kalinskaya beat Iga yesterday. And what a great match Kalinskaya played. I mean, she was down 4-2 in the first set, and that's just right when you think Iga's going to run away with it. She just stepped up her game. And, man, I was really surprised with the horrendous return game of Iga. I think Kalinskaya was at almost like 70% of second serve points won. And for the caliber of returner that Iga is, it just really surprised me. And because I'm not a coach or, you know, the player that's really knowledgeable on technique, I'm curious, you know, you may have an opinion off the bat, or maybe you can go back and look into it and get back to me. But is Kalinskaya's second serve like that good? Or like, what was it that was keeping Iga from being able to return it? I think the serve stats got even worse in the second set. you know, Kalinskaya was winning like 80%+ of her second serves. It was quite baffling to me, but Iga did put up quite a fight to try and come back. She got down two breaks, I think, in the second set, and managed to get one back, but she faced a couple match points and fended them off, and then the third one, I believe, is where Kalinskaya got it. And what I really liked about Kalinskaya when she won is she did not have an overt celebration. She, you know, when people have a big win like that, this is likely the best win of her career, right? It's a 1,000 event. She beats the number one player in the world, and she gets to the final. Most people kind of like over celebrate, and that's kind of, and then they have a letdown in the next round. But she just was business as usual. Let's get to the final. Like, I want to win this, and I feel that meant something. But I don't actually even know if she won. Philip, did she win the final?
She did not win the final. So sorry to say that Paolini took it. 4-6, 7-5, 7-5 in the final. So it did go to three sets. It was very tight, and it looked like it was anyone's game, but I guess Paolini just had it on the edge. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to watch it today because we're on the road. But yeah, I think it was definitely a breakout for Kalinskaya. I think her top ranking in the past was 38, and she currently is at 40. So with all of these wins from Dubai, she's definitely going to move up in the rankings. I think what was really unexpected was that she beat Coco Gauff, and that's what really kind of set it off, was that in the quarterfinals, she was playing against Coco Gauff and pretty handily took her out. Coco took the first set 6-2, but Kalinskaya was really steady, had a ton of power at 6-4, and then took Coco out 6-2 on the last set, so double break. So you really felt like Kalinskaya is definitely the in-form player. I was really hoping that she was going to win that final, but unfortunately, Paolini, who was unfortunately the one who was going to play against Rybakina, but she had a walkover on that. So that was a drag for that. And another exciting match was that Swiatek played against Zhang, and we wanted to see how that match was going to go. But for Iga, it was pretty straightforward, just straight sets. Yeah, definitely Kalinskaya. This was her game. This was her tournament. Unfortunately, she wasn't able to pull it through to the final. Whenever I've seen Kalinskaya play against Iga or Rybakina, what I notice the most is that she takes the ball super early. So really just on the rise. It reminds me a lot of the Italian player, Giorgi.
Oh, Camilla Giorgi. Okay.
Yeah. I'm just like kind of small in stature, but able to generate tons of pace. And a lot of it is just that she has incredibly good timing. So the ball is just coming off the ground and she's stepping in. She's just hitting that ball. And she did that a lot in her return game. Even though the opponents were serving pretty decently, Kalinskaya would just step in on that ball and just take it super early. Reminded me of Roger Federer.
Nice.
But you don't think of Kalinskaya as like one of the top players, one of the winning players. So I feel like this was a really great run for her. And it's always exciting to see, just like Yastremska with the Australian Open, can she manage to hold on to this form? Was it a fluke? And it would be so interesting to see, why does someone have a run at a certain... One thing we do know about Dubai is that the surface is fast. And so if someone like a Roger or like a Kalinskaya can step in on the ball, take it very early, it's coming back with a lot of pace. And you just saw Iga really having a hard time with those returns. They were landing right at her feet and just really not able to dig them out. And Iga was very out of sorts. I mean, she was not happy.
Racket at one point, which, yeah, I mean, she was super frustrated. And I think to your point is Dubai is a little fast. And we know Coco and Iga are great clay court players because they do actually have those big swings and they both have extreme grips, right?
Yeah.
And so they need more time. So the way that you're saying that Kalinskaya is able to take the ball early, she just rushed probably their shot. Coco's forehand's already weak, but she needs that extra time. So there's a weakness that's easy to expose there. Iga, her forehand is her strength, However, when people with a lot of power attack her forehand, they break it down. And they make her, when she's really late on it, she has can spray forehand errors a lot. And I just wonder if maybe that might be one of the reasons why she was able to have success against those two in this tournament.
Very well could be. I also noticed that on her serve, Kalinskaya's first and second serve was really a lot less spin, more of a direct contact serve. And so I think Iga struggled with that because it is a faster surface. The serve is coming in a little bit faster, and Kalinskaya seems to be hitting the ball flatter on her serve than, say, for instance, Iga. Iga has a ton of spin, really just spins it in, not only on her serve, but also on her forehand and backhand. So that was really interesting to see. But Iga was just off, and I don't know if that was a physical issue. I mean, she was very dejected in her press conference after the fact. In fact, let's just take a listen to this. And you have to listen closely because she's basically mumbling during the press conference. She's having a hard time talking, and she was so angry at herself, as she says. Let's listen.
I didn't play my tennis tonight, but on the other hand, I was there to win it, you know, so for sure I didn't live up to my standard as I usually do, so I'm not happy, but on the other hand, these 2 weeks were so intense that you just have to look forward and it doesn't matter now.
You got frustrated in the match and threw your racket and stuff. I'm wondering, what was the most frustrating part? What were you frustrated with the most?
Well, I felt like I didn't have power anymore to give even more, which doesn't happen often. So I just felt out of control a little bit because of that. Usually when I tell myself what to do, I can improve my game, but today I was so out of power a little bit and tired that I just couldn't, No, it was day by day it was a little bit worse. I wasn't talking to you about it because it didn't really make sense to go over it. But for sure, as I said, it's been an intense 2 weeks, and I'm angry, but on the other hand, there aren't many players that actually survive this kind of tournament, so I just have to kind of let it go and accept it.
So there's Iga, and yeah, I think it's really depressing for her coming off of that win in Doha, right?
Yeah, and you wonder if fatigue is something. Like I was mentioning our last podcast, it's strange to me to have back-to-back 1,000s. That's a lot to put on the players. I've been playing every single day for 1,000, and she has a lot of points to defend, I'm sure, as well, right? And it's just because she won Doha, she had to be there until that Sunday. It might even be part of the reason why Rybakina withdrew, right? Although I did hear she had some sort of stomach bug, but it also could be, fatigue can be a factor as well. It's a hard life to, if you keep getting to finals, then to continue playing. If she was fresher, maybe she would have had a better mental space.
So what's really interesting, you had mentioned that Rybakina had gastrointestinal illness, is what is reported on the WTA site, that Jasmine Paolini, she actually was unseeded in the tournament. She won the tournament. She was able to carry it all the way through. And I guess under the radar, I feel like this was her tournament. We're not even talking about her.
Right. And I think she had a pretty good run at the end of last year where I had her name in my mind and on my tongue, I guess, a lot. Because I was thinking and watching her game and talking about her future. And then I think she even lost to Kalinskaya the last time they played. So that makes it even more impressive that she was able to beat Kalinskaya and win this. I mean, a 1,000 event is a big deal. It's a big title to win. So that just says a lot about her mental strength to me.
Yeah, and it makes sense that they're so tired from Doha. We talked about it was just being literally the next day the tournament starts and you have to just walk into it. That's kind of crazy. One really notable event for Paolini was that she actually was playing Soriana Cristiana. Kristea. She was playing Soriana Kristea, who pulled off a remarkable comeback because she was 5-1 down in the set.
Wow. The third set or second? I mean, either way, it's impressive, but I'm just curious. Yeah, and Kristea was playing really good. I watched her match before Paolini, and I can't remember who she was playing, but she's playing lights out. And on a side note, I love Kristea's kit. Her bright shoes are so cool. Every time she's on screen, I get excited. And I was actually thinking about you. I don't know how much, if you watched any highlights, because you mentioned you hadn't watched any Del Rey last podcast because of the screen and the camera
shot
just not being poor quality. Well, there was times at Dubai when the color of the court, it was really hard to track the ball on my TV.
And yeah, same for me.
Interest a little bit.
Yeah, same for me. Like, you could hear them swinging and hitting, and then you couldn't track the ball, like, going back over the net. So it was really strange. So, again, it's just very difficult to enjoy that while you're watching. Cristiana also, the match before she played Paolini, actually saved 6 match points.
Who was that against? I feel like I saw that match.
Oh, I think it was against Vondrousova.
Yes.
Right? Vondrousova was really in control of the match throughout, and then Kristea just really stepped it up, came back, and I think that they report here that it's actually her 21st career top 10 win, and the second of 2024.
Nice. Yeah, she's doing well. And you know what? The other thing I noticed, two things actually I'll say. First, you mentioned how you hear the ball and you see the ball, but we couldn't see the ball very well on this court. But also, I couldn't hear the ball half the time because I don't know what they had going on. Firework shows, there was like air shows. There was constantly like this like outside noise and ruckus going on. And sometimes you actually couldn't hear the balls or the players' squeaky shoes and stuff.
It sounded like construction or something. It was like machine or, and all the players would look up and then look at the umpire and say, what the heck is that?
Yeah, and they couldn't do much. And then the other thing that struck me is when watching Sorana Cristea's matches is the Romanian support. We used to see it when Simona Halep was on tour. And, you know, without Simona, you don't see it as much, I guess, or maybe I don't just because I'm not watching all of Cristea's matches. But, yeah, watching Cristea's support, there was so much Romanian support there. And I feel like they get some good support out there at all the tournaments. And it's really cool.
So not only was she 5-1 down, according to this news report, she was a set and 5-1 down and came all the way back. Wait, how is that possible? Oh, she won the second set and took the third set. Wow, that's insane. So this is what Cristiana had to say. This has to be the biggest comeback of my career. To be honest, at a set and 5-1, I wasn't thinking about winning anymore. I was like, at least make it nice for the public. At least make it longer and give them a bit nicer tennis. So I don't know how I managed to do it. I love that quote.
Yeah, it's nice. When I like hearing those quotes. I think Iga was down earlier in a thing, and she said she kind of like checked out. And there was somebody else who, maybe it was Rybakina. Recently, they've been a lot of comebacks, and then they say, oh, I was already like on the airplane, or I was already checked out on the beach, you know. Oh, maybe it was Vekic when she beat Sabalenka, which, by the way, was another huge headline to me. From Dubai, she ended up going out, I think, in the next round. But Sabalenka to lose in the first round, I think, of this her first tournament back, is kind of a big headline. But yeah, it's interesting to hear like what goes on in their mind when they're that far down. Like, I don't know. When I'm down in matches, personally, I'm always just like every point, fight for every point. Don't worry about like just get this point. This is the point I'm gonna get, and take it one point at a time. But I've never thought I'm already on the plane. Well, because I'm not flying anywhere to play tennis. But also, I just don't ever think like I'm gonna lose in the match. I always think like I can still do it. So it's strange that they do think like just try and keep it interesting for the crowd, or you know, try and make it last a little longer before you end up on the beach or on the plane. How do you think when you're down in a match, Philip?
Yeah, I actually change my game. I start thinking top spin more, spin the ball in more. Usually I'm kind of like trying to be Roger Federer and trying to hit like winner shots or, you know, something stupid like that. But when I get down, that means that the person on the other side is playing a lot better than me, and I need to be more consistent, more in the rallies, give myself opportunities, don't go for stupid shots, which unfortunately is a bad habit I have.
So you focus on solution and, like, changes. You're not like, oh, I'm just already on the plane home, even though we're not going on planes home. I'm already on the car ride or electric scooter ride home.
Well, yeah, for me, I'm not thinking that I even have a next match, so this is all I have, right? Might as well make the most of it, and I don't want to lose, so let's see if I can pull something out of a hat, you know?
Yeah, that's cool.
I guess there was some interesting conflict with Coco Gauff, too, where she asked for an umpire to come out, or she asked the umpire for the director to come out, supervisor, and apparently the umpire refused to have the supervisor come out. So kind of a weird, strange event with Coco, but obviously Coco was struggling, had a really hard time, and just really dissipated after the 6-4 loss in the second set and then 6-2 in the third set. So just kind of falling apart. And it does kind of show that Coco is not really in form right now.
Yeah, I didn't catch that match. I only heard my Instagram pal, Renee Stubbs, you might have heard of her, on her recent podcast talking about how the chair umpire really messed up, actually. Whatever happened, they made the wrong call. And then for them not bring the supervisor out, she thought that Coco should have sat down and kind of like put her foot down and was like, I'm not playing until you bring the supervisor out. But yeah, she doesn't seem to be in form. And I feel like the whole win ugly thing, it worked really well with, I think the U.S. crowd helps her. So I'm interested to see how she fares at Indian Wells in Miami to see if having the home turf on her soil can bring some confidence and spark some of that win ugly energy back, since her forehand has not improved, right? So everyone's still, she still has a very attackable weakness. So there has to be something that equalizes that, right? And I guess to me, the only thing is potentially the U.S. crowd.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I do feel like there's a lot of, maybe favoritism is not the right word, but there's a lot of backing for Coco, both organizationally and from the U.S. side of things. So it's got to be hard to deal with all of that mentally as well, and what your expectation is on yourself and the expectation you have from everyone else around. So I wonder what is going through your head. Of course, we'll never know, but...
You know, I was just watching on Instagram this morning. They posted on Tennis Channel's site the very first interview at the table, like maybe at the US Open or something, with Coco, and he asked what the pressure and all the eyes on her and all of that was like, and she said she likes it. She was like, not verbatim, I'm paraphrasing, but she didn't mind the pressure, and she said, I love people talking about me. She said how she used to watch the Tennis Channel, and so did her family, and every time she heard her name, she'd go running into the living room to like hear them talking about her. And she didn't think of it as like this added pressure.
Yeah, I think you definitely feel that when you're on the up, right? On the rise. You feel like everything is so cool. It's all happening. But now Coco is struggling. Now they're talking about her losing and her mentality. And boy, this tennis community, and especially, you know, tennis Twitter, can be ruthless in dealing with people. Well, back to Kalinskaya. I just read a...
Sorry.
Post about Kalinskaya that she has played 19 matches in 2024, including qualifying and main draws, and she has won 15 of them. So 15 of the 19 matches in 2024, she made the quarters in the Australian Open and now the final in Dubai. So she really has moved up. She started the year ranked 80 in the world and will rise to at least 24 on Monday.
Big movement. How exciting for her.
Yeah, so that's really exciting. Someone to watch. Need to see her kind of breaking through. Like, I saw her play many, many matches as she was on the rise, because she was always playing like an Iga or a Rybakina or something. Wasn't able to pull it off, but it seems like maybe she's starting to come into her form and her time. Love to look into her coaching and see if there was any change there, or if things are just pulling together right now. Well, we're heading almost into San Diego, Valerie.
7 minutes away.
7 minutes away from the tournament, so I think this is a good time to take a quick break. It's a beautiful, beautiful day. I mean, the weather is perfect. I think it says 73 degrees outside, which is amazing. That's like the dream. And it's partly cloudy, but lots of blue sky. So we're very blessed to be out here at the Symbiotica San Diego Open today.
Tennis Pal Coach has everything a coach needs to expand and generate business right in the palm of their hand. With Tennis Pal Coach, coaches can access the fastest growing community of tennis players on an app. They can analyze videos and communicate with students via text or video chat anywhere in the world. Coaches can also plan and schedule lessons, as well as receive payment. Tennis Pal Coach, because coaching doesn't have to stop off the court.